The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, pretty good, thank you, Howard. How are you doing today?
Yeah, very good. We're having some quite serious discussions today, but I suppose not always a bad thing at all. But let's get on to subjects in Israel. Prime Minister Netanyahu has threatened Israel's enemies not to test her resolve. All right, lots and lots of war talk in the area. We're seeing this Iran all the time. What is going on, and why was that threat issued now?
Well, the Prime Minister was getting involved in the Air Force training drill that we discussed yesterday, and he was doing a tour of the northern area with Chief of General Staff Lieutenant General Aviv Kochavi, and with some senior IDF officers, and there are some photo opportunities showing the Prime Minister getting off the military helicopter and examining some of the Air Force exercises, and in fact the general IDF exercises, training exercises that have been going on in the north, focused in the north, but not solely in the north. And he then issued the warning, saying that he was extremely impressed with what he'd seen, that the IDF seems to be ready for almost any eventuality, and that the commanders and the soldiers are as determined as ever to do what they need to do in order to carry out instructions that are issued by the government and the senior general staff. And he just issued this warning, saying that Israel's enemies should not test her resolve, because Israel has the power to destroy, and that power will be used if necessary, whether the threat comes from the north or the south or the east, and of course all the west, I guess, from the coast as well, but he didn't particularly mention that. And so this was really Prime Minister Netanyahu just doing a general round to examine, to see for himself some of the training exercise that's been going on over the past week or so, and which is due to conclude, I think, towards the end of this week. But really a very, very significant major training exercise that has involved everybody in Israel who needs to be involved, up to the Prime Minister himself.
Yeah, interesting. But certainly the talk, the rhetoric in the area, I mean, we were talking about Twitter earlier, but the rhetoric in the Middle East is certainly just as bad as that which we're seeing on Twitter at the moment.
Absolutely. I mean, there's a huge escalation, and we've been speaking about it in dribs and drabs. You know, we spoke about Iran earlier in the week, and I didn't necessarily want to go back to discussing that, but of course there is a story this morning that Iran has claimed to have shot a U.S. spy drone out of the sky, and the U.S. is denying it. But, you know, generally speaking, where there's smoke, there's fire, and there's obviously a huge escalation in the threats coming from Iran, and the war talk that's going on between the U.S. and Iran at the moment. And next week we'll have a chance to talk about a very important meeting that will take place in Israel next week, involving national security advisors from the U.S., Russia, and Israel. That meeting due to take place in Jerusalem next week, and we will certainly have a chance to talk about it once you know, the meeting has taken place and we've got some information about what comes out of it.
All right. Six Israeli universities have been included on a list of the world's top 1,000 institutions of higher learning. What's the benchmark? How did we do last year?
Well, first of all, the way that these universities are generally evaluated is they're based on the evaluation is done on a number of different criteria, including academic reputation, employer reputation, the faculty to student ratio, citations per faculty, international faculty, international student ratios. So various benchmarks, various measures that are used to assess the various institutions of higher learning. It'll come as no surprise that the top three universities in the world were actually three American universities, the MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, Stanford University, and Harvard. They were on the first, second, and third. They were in first, second, and third positions on this list of 1,000 higher education institutions. Six Israeli universities did appear there, and their results were kind of mixed. Hebrew U has been Israel's best ranked university over the years, and that was certainly the case in the latest list that has been published, coming in at number 162, a little bit lower than last year in terms of the number of points that were awarded to the Hebrew U, but in a very kind of similar position to that of last year. Then the second highest ranked Hebrew Israeli university was the Tel Aviv University, which is in position number 219. And the Tel Aviv University managed to earn a few more points than last year. Unfortunately, the Technion, which is the third highest ranked institution, actually fell also in terms of the number of points that it earned. It is in place number 257 on the list. So I think it's quite impressive that, you know, three Israeli universities are within the top 300. Ben-Gurion University in Beersheba was the fourth ranked, finished at number 419, and that was a fall of about eight places from last year. It was also just in the top 500, just above the number 400. And Bar Ilan was ranked in the range between 551 and 560, and was quite significantly up from last year. Bar Ilan seems to have really improved its position, coming in more than 600 last year, and this year in the 550 to 560 range, so a lot better. And then the last on the list in terms of Israeli universities was the University of Haifa, and that might come as a surprise to some people, ranked in between 651 and 700, which is approximately the same as last year. So I think it's impressive that Israeli universities do have such a high standing when you compare them to other universities around the world. It is enormously difficult to get positions at Israeli universities because, unfortunately, there's a real shortage of places. But it does show that, you know, the quality of the education at higher learning institutions in Israel is a high quality. And even when you compare it to international institutions, then they do pretty well. So I think that's a source of pride for Israel. And of course, there's a lot of work to try and improve that. There is a certain focus by Israeli institutions of higher learning on technological studies, and I don't think that you can really measure that in any meaningful way in terms of the contributions that are made in terms of technology research, medical research in particular. We spoke earlier this year about, you know, organs that are being grown in laboratories at some of the universities, and this is huge development. And of course, some of the certain fixes that have been found for medical conditions, not healing, but at least treatments for certain medical conditions and ways of discovering them a lot sooner in order to treat them better. So there's a lot of interesting research and innovation also coming out of these universities. But I think overall, a good showing by Israel's universities all the way around.
And I think worth remembering is how relatively young these universities are.
True, very true. Especially when you look, I mean, some of them are a little bit older. Hebrew U, for example, is obviously one that's been around a lot longer than the others. But, you know, the University of Haifa is a relatively new university. And, of course, the Technion has a name around the world. When you talk about engineering studies and technological development, it's certainly the place number 257, I think, conceals to some degree the contribution that the Technion is making to technology and to engineering around the world. So certainly a relatively new institution and doing very well.
Fascinating. Really, really interesting. Mervin wants to know if South African universities are on it. Mervin, I have got the list. I will have a look and see how we did, but I can't answer that right now. Israeli cities have decided to enforce legislation around the use of electric scooters and bikes in the cities. What legislation is this that's going to be enforced?
Well, it's an opportunity for me just to talk about some of the culture that you see in Israeli cities, especially Tel Aviv, when it comes to public transportation. And these days, when you're in Tel Aviv, the one thing that people notice, particularly pedestrians, you can't avoid seeing it, are the number of scooters that are out on the streets, electric scooters, people riding them everywhere. They are absolutely everywhere, whether they're parked on the sidewalks or whether people are riding them. It's something that's become very associated with the city of Tel Aviv, is the extent to which people are riding either electric bikes or bicycles in general, and in particular these scooters. And, you know, while the cities are trying to encourage the use of scooters because it's a very handy means of transport, and of course it's ecological, and there's a whole business model that goes around that, just for people to understand how it works, the scooters are, some people own their own scooters, and obviously that's one thing, but a lot of the scooters that are used in Tel Aviv are actually rental scooters. Mm. And so what happens is that you sign up to one of a number of options that you have in terms of scooter rental companies. I think there are about 5 or 6 scooter rental companies now operating in Tel Aviv. And you can sign up to any one or all of them as you wish. You have an app on your phone. You go onto your app. You say, I want a scooter now. The app will show you where the nearest scooter is in proximity to where you're standing. It'll send you along there. You pick up the scooter. You ride the scooter to your destination, wherever you wish to go. You just drop it literally outside the door of wherever you've gone to. You sign out of the app. You get charged for the amount of time that you've used the scooter for. And that's it. It's just available for you from door to door, literally. And the way that the batteries of these scooters get charged up, because obviously someone has to go around picking them up to charge up the batteries, is another whole business model in and of itself, because what they do is they encourage people to pick up the scooters and to take them home to your private home to charge them up at home. And they pay you for that. So you can sign up to become a so-called battery charger, and you go along, you pick up one of a number of, I mean, you see sometimes people driving a scooter with like 5 scooters piled up on the scooter, and they're taking that home. They're going to take those 5 scooters. They're going to charge them up at home. And as soon as they've been charged up, they get, they are asked to put them back out on the street, wherever it is, and they get paid for charging the battery. So there's a whole business around these scooters. And it's just fascinating to see how it works and how effective it is. But time has come for some real framework to be placed around the use of scooters. There is a lot of danger involved. First of all, minors were using the scooters, and these scooters go quite fast. I mean, they're limiting the speed, according to the new rules, to 25 kilometers per hour. That's kind of going to be the maximum speed that these scooters are allowed to travel at. So they're pretty quick. And at one stage, minors and young people were riding them, but now that's been outlawed, and you need to be at least 16 years old. And I think that in the scooter rental companies, they're actually demanding that people actually have a driver's license that they can show in order to use the scooter. So first of all, they want to limit the speed at which the scooters can travel. They want to limit the people who ride the scooters. They want to limit where people are riding them, because they've become a bit of a nuisance. People are riding them on the pavements everywhere, in the streets. And so they want to try and limit the scooters to be used only in bicycle lanes. And of course, that demands that the city expands the infrastructure substantially in order to accommodate that. They're trying to now enforce legislation that people will need to wear helmets when they're on these scooters. That is already a law. Unfortunately, nobody takes any notice of it.
Because it doesn't look cool, Anthony.
I beg your pardon?
It doesn't look cool. Have you seen people in Tel Aviv? Nobody's going to do anything that you do, where you don't look cool. I'm sorry.
Well, I'll tell you what the coolest thing is. The coolest thing is to have a helmet and to hang it over the handlebars and ride it along like that. That's really helpful, right?
Absolutely. Is that
the look? That's what you see all the time. Yeah. That's what you see all the time, honestly. But the most important and interesting thing for me, there are two things. First of all, they're not going to allow you simply to drop your scooter outside the front door. They're going to make areas where scooters can be parked, and they're going to demand that these scooter rental companies insist that scooters be parked only in those parking areas. And they're also going to limit each scooter rental company to only 2,500 scooters amongst their fleet of scooters. So, I mean, I would have thought that 2,500 is quite a lot, but apparently some of the companies are operating even more than 2,500 scooters as of now. And they're going to be insisting upon a distribution of the scooter somehow, so that scooters get to places where they're really needed, to try to coincide with the light rail and all the rest of it. So particularly some of the work that's going on in Jaffa. So they're going to try and insist that the scooters are distributed in a certain way to make it easier for people to pick them up where they are needed. So it's an interesting approach. But this whole culture of scooter riding in Tel Aviv has really taken over. And it's more than I've seen in any other city that I've visited, I have to say.
Very, very interesting. It's become this whole different culture in Israel. And it's
lovely. I mean, it really brings a nice atmosphere to the city. People are out and about. You can meet people. People are on and off their scooters all the time. It certainly adds a certain atmosphere to the city, and I like that.
Yeah, I do as well. Anthony Reich, thank you as always. You have a fantastic weekend, a Shabbat Shalom, and of course, we will catch you on a Monday morning in the same slot at the same time for our Israel report. Hope everything goes well and that you have a peaceful weekend.